Welcome to Earth Eats, a show of real food and green living. I'm Annie Corrigan. Nicolette Hahn Nyman is an attorney, author, and livestock rancher who has worked for a number of environmental organizations, including the Waterkeeper Alliance and the National Wildlife Federation. Her recent book, Righteous Pork Chop, is a personal memoir dealing with animal agriculture in the United States. In part one of my three-part conversation with Nyman, she talks about growing up in the Midwest near farm-fresh food and then moving to the East Coast to practice law in New York City.
I mean, I started out, as you said, in the Midwest, which is really kind of the heart of so much of the great farming in this country. And I had the opportunity. I grew up in Kalamazoo, which is an urbanized community, obviously. But I spent a lot of time on farms while I was growing up, because my parents were very interested in us getting a lot of our own foods directly from farms, and we picked all of our own fruit, and we had a number of friends that had farms, and we would occasionally go out and work for the day on the farm. So I kind of learned some things about farming, and my parents really believed in the importance of eating very healthful food and eating food that was as close as possible to having been, harvested. And my mom used to grow a lot of her own foods for our family in her own garden. So there was kind of always an emphasis on eating good food and knowing where your food came from. But I still, I still only had a certain amount of understanding of it until the job at Waterkeeper Alliance when I moved to New York. Then I was really seeing the inside of kind of the modern industrial way of producing food, especially livestock and dairy. And that was very different than what I had seen as a child. So I kind of became concerned that a lot of the food that I was eating was actually coming from those kinds of operations, the very things that I was, working in my day job to to change or to get rid of, really, this form of production that I think is totally unsustainable. And so I began to really examine my own eating habits, and I found that quite challenging in New York City to get away from the industrial type of food.
One suggestion for folks living in big cities like New York who want to get local produce is to grow your own food. Well, you can't very well do that when it comes to meat. What do you do if you want locally and organically raised meat and you live in an urban setting?
Kim Severson wrote a piece for the New York Times about how sort of pasture-raised, more locally produced meats were becoming more and more available in New York City. And they interviewed a number of people that were buying them. They were buying them mostly at farmers markets, and some of them through CSAs, Community Supportive Agriculture, and other methods where they were getting directly connected with farms. It's very challenging, though, when you're in a major urban area. You really have to seek out those kinds of things. But what I have been seeing, I speak and I travel all over the country quite a bit, and I'm in contact with people working on these issues all over, and I increasingly am hearing about more and more things that are happening like that are making it easier for people living in urban areas to get really good, traditionally produced foods, non-industrial kinds of foods. And so I've become convinced that it's really a matter of making the effort. If you look for it, it's probably there, even if you don't think it is in your own community.
Your new book is called Righteous Pork Chop, and it takes a look at industrial meat production in the United States. So tell me, how pigs live naturally? What do they want to eat? Where do they want to live? What do they want to do naturally?
The domesticated pig that we, that people eat as pork is very closely related, actually, to the wild boar. What has been discovered by researchers in Europe, there's a couple of major experiments where this was done. They actually took domesticated pigs that had been, in farms for many generations, and they actually released them into large wild areas and observed them for extended periods of time and filmed them. And what they found out was actually that those pigs behaved almost identically to the wild boar. So what they found out is these are animals that live a lot like dogs do, in that they live in groups, they have hierarchies, they have, they have like a pecking order like chickens do. They're very active creatures. They spend a lot of time moving about, rooting. They spend many hours every day rooting. And grazing, they love to graze, although we don't think of them as grazing animals, but they do a lot of grazing and a lot of digging and foraging. They're omnivores. They will eat just about anything. And the sows, in particular, are very interesting to watch because these are the females that have offspring. they actually build these amazing nests that sometimes even have roofs on them. They're like little huts that they'll build out of whatever materials are available. So whether it's straw or sticks or ferns, anything like that. When they have their young, they will spend a long time building one of these nests, and then they separate themselves basically from the group to do this, and then they'll stay off in this little hut that they've built for themselves for a number of days before returning back to the group with their litters. So they have they're very intelligent creatures. That's kind of a well-known fact about them as well. The intelligence is comparable to dogs. So they have very interesting and active minds and bodies as well when they're living in the wild.
People do often compare pigs' intelligence to that of dogs and use that as evidence for why we should treat pigs humanely. I wonder, do we have to have that human connection to the animal to justify treating it humanely?
You know, in my view, any animal that we are taking the life of for food is an animal that deserves kind of the best possible life that we can provide it before we do that. And I think it's just, you know, part of it is just out of, you know, it's just, first of all, I think it's just an obligation we have because we are taking its life. But I also think it's just something that we should endeavor to behave that way towards every living creature that we encounter, whether they're in the wild or they're domesticated.
Then tell me how pigs live in a factory farm setting.
What's really troubling about factory farms in terms of the way pigs are kept is that their lives are sort of radically deprived of any ability to do any of those natural behaviors. First of all, obviously, their movement is incredibly restricted. Most of the pigs are kept in pens that are very crowded. The sows, the breeding females, are kept in individual cages that are very, very small. They're so narrow, they're unable to even turn around. So they are particularly intensively confined. All of the pigs are on a hard surface for their entire lives, so they're not able to even lie down or stand on something soft, and there's also nothing for them to do in terms of, you know, sort of manipulating their environment. They can't dig or they can't root. They can't do anything, 24 hours a day. They're just left in this very barren and very boring environment. They are standing essentially above their own liquefied manure because they're contained in buildings continually. Again, very crowded buildings. You generally have at least 1,000 pigs per building, and all of their manure and urine is kind of collected beneath where they're standing. What that means is that the air that they're breathing, first of all, smells incredibly bad, but it's also just laden with all kinds of contaminants. Obviously, dust is a huge issue, but also hydrogen sulfide and ammonia because it's right above this liquefied manure. And this is such a big issue in confinement pig operations, actually, that about 30% of the workers have chronic lung problems. And the hog industry has repeatedly identified the lung infection problem within the pig herds as their number one health problem. They're very unpleasant environments. I've been in quite a few of these buildings. They're very depressing places. It's not a place you'd want to go and spend any time.
How is liquefied manure used in a factory farm? How is it stored? And what sort of environmental problems does it create?
Well, liquefied manure is something that is kind of a recent invention in farming. It's only been done for the last several decades. And the reason for liquefying the manure is basically to make it more portable. So it's kind of comparable to the human sewage system where you add water in a toilet. But the difference is that when you have a toilet and you flush it, that actually goes somewhere, either to a septic system that has a sort of treatment system and a containment system, or it goes to a sewage treatment plant, a municipal sewage treatment plant. That doesn't happen at an animal factory. What happens is that all of the liquefied manure is then put in some sort of large holding containment. Often it's just an open air, large, what they call a lagoon. Those are the most troubling systems, but there are also somewhere that's more contained than that. But in all of these systems, you have huge, huge amounts of liquefied manure, hundreds of millions of gallons that are contained, and then it's periodically sprayed or land applied onto the land. There's nothing inherently wrong with putting manure on the land. In fact, that's a good thing to do. But the problem is that, first of all, when you're holding that much liquefied manure together in one place, there's a huge problem with that holding compartment, whatever it is, the lagoon or the tank. They pretty much all have leakage issues. Hundreds, literally hundreds of incidents have occurred with massive spills of the liquid manure into streams and rivers, and some of the most dramatic have been in North Carolina with Hurricane Floyd and such. But they happen every year all over the country where these exist. And then they volatilize to the air. There's a huge problem with air pollution from liquefied manure lagoons because of the fact that basically a lot of the contaminants that are in the lagoon end up going into the air. So there are lots of different levels on which there's a huge problem. And then once you do apply it to the land, because of the fact that there's so much manure, it gets sort of almost inevitably, it gets over-applied to the land. So you have more applied to the land than the soils, than will bind to the soils or will be taken up by the plants. Thus, it ends up, again, in the water system or in the air. So you have just sort of all these different steps in the process where there's a lot of pollution happening. The whole system is sort of, you know, sort of rife with problems for food, the healthfulness of food, the safety of food, but also at each stage along the way, there are environmental contamination issues. And even if you were able to address some of those, it's fundamentally an inhumane way of treating animals. So there's just the whole system doesn't work on so many different levels.
On the traditional farms you visited, how did they handle the manure?
Well, a few things make a system really different. Basically, on a traditional farm, you have fewer animals. That's kind of the number one point that really differentiates them. So on a kind of a hog factory operation, you would have anywhere from 3,000 to 900,000 pigs in one place.
Wow.
I mean, very large populations, potentially extremely large. On a traditional farm where it's based on pasture or in some cases a deep straw bedded kind of barn, you're going to have a herd that's a few hundred pigs. So just immediately there's a difference in terms of the concentration. That's incredibly important when you're talking about manure because manure is very beneficial in the right amounts. When it becomes too much, that's when it becomes a contaminant. They talk about the same concept when you're talking about drugs. You know, a safe drug like aspirin is very beneficial in a small amount, and it becomes a toxin when you take too much of it. So it's the same thing with manure. A small amount of it is a very good thing for a farm. When you have too much, it becomes a pollution problem. But basically, the pigs on a traditional farm are out of doors. They're on pasture. They're depositing the manure directly onto the pasture. And that's immediately getting sort of treated by the sunlight. It's drying out from the sun. It's also getting the pathogens are being killed. And eventually it becomes incorporated in the soil, and that's very beneficial. It's a good thing. It helps the bacterial life in the soil. It adds nutrients back to the soil. So it enhances the value of the land. So it's self-treating. Mm-hmm. When you have, an industrial operation, you have to deal with the waste as a pollution problem.
Author and lawyer Nicolette Nyman. In part two of our conversation, she talks about the dichotomy of being a vegetarian who also raises livestock. Listen to our complete interview at eartheats.org. Thanks for listening. I'm Annie Corrigan.